Welcome to Local Talk on KHOI Community Radio, where we explore the people, stories, and events in Central Iowa. I'm Ursula Rudenberg, here with B.J. Kearns.
Welcome. I don't usually host Local Talk, but I'm a show host and reporter in other areas of KHOI. My pleasure to be here. I agreed to help host the show because I'm an Iowa State alum, and homecoming events are opening this Sunday. And homecoming week runs from October 23rd through October 29th.
On Sunday, October 23rd, a homecoming parade will kick things off in downtown Ames at 2 p.m. A homecoming parade has not occurred in decades, so this is an attempt to reinstate a former tradition. Allison Pitts and Abby Stortzer are both with the Student Alumni Leadership Council at Iowa State University, and you are responsible for organizing the homecoming parade.
Yes, correct. Yep.
Thank you for joining us.
Thanks for having us.
Tell us, where will the route be for the homecoming parade?
That will start on 5th Street, and then we'll be turning on Clark, and then it will be ending down on Main Street. So kind of what the 4th of July parade is like, if you're familiar with that route at all, just backwards.
It's a traditional downtown 4th of July route.
Yes.
Uh-huh. And again, this will be at 2 o'clock on Sunday?
Yep, that's when we will begin. Yes.
Now, I did a little digging around, and what I learned was that the homecoming parade at Iowa State existed from 1923 until about 1950.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So it's been a while.
Yeah. Yep.
So it's been a while.
It has been a while.
Why downtown Ames?
Yeah, we thought downtown would be a great way to include the Iowa State community. So Ames is very supportive of Iowa State, and so we really wanted to get the community involved. And so having it down on Main Street, we hope it would broaden our audience and include both students, Ames community members, and then bring alumni back as well.
So you're doing outreach to the rest of the community with the parade instead of keeping it local at Iowa State.
Correct. Yeah, we're really excited, hopefully. We've seen a lot of excitement and support from the Ames community, so I think it'll be really great to have it downtown.
And what sectors of the Ames community have expressed interest in the parade?
Definitely. We've worked a lot with the Main Street Cultural District Association and their businesses as well, and then also Campus Town and just other local community organizations that have reached out. We have some involved as entries in the parade, so we're really excited about that too.
Who is going to be in the parade? What's the parade going to look like?
We'll start off with our Grand Marshal. That will be Warren and Bev Madden. And then following that, we have several other dignitaries and then, you know, just a lot of student organizations, a lot of businesses, things around the community, sports athletes, some bands, lots of different people.
So we have some performing acts. So our dance marathon from Iowa State will be there. We have Cardinal Gymnastics from the Ames community, so some performing acts, some music acts. Also, Solar Car from Iowa State's doing it, as well as Lutheran Services in Iowa, and other community organizations, like she said. So it should be a wide variety of people walking with banners, and also floats as well.
Floats, too.
Yeah.
Correct.
And who's making the floats?
We have a couple entries. Yep. I know our organization, Student Alumni Leadership Council, we will be having a float in there that will have Cardinal Court, so that recognizes outstanding females and male students at the university.
And what's that called?
Cardinal Court.
Uh-huh. And that's outstanding students?
Students. Mm-hmm. Yep. Mm-hmm. It's basically a scholarship program that we have. So they'll be recognized on our float. And then we have some Greek chapters who have some floats.
Dance Marathon is also doing a float.
Dance Marathon is a college?
It's an organization at Iowa State. So they're the largest student-run philanthropy at Iowa State. And so they will probably do their morale dance, so a dance that they do. They raise money for the Children's Hospital at University of Iowa. Mm-hmm. And so they do kind of a year worth of fundraising, and their big event is in January. And so they kind of do a dance that night of because it's about a 14-hour event. So they'll do that in the parade. But it's a very popular organization at Iowa State, so we're excited to have them. And so there'll be a wide variety of – some colleges as well are doing floats. College of Engineering is doing a float, so we'll see how that is. And it should be cool.
Do the floats have a theme?
It is up to the student organization or whoever's making the floats. So we kind of told them the homecoming theme of leave your legacy, and they kind of run with it, and they can do whatever that they would like. So hopefully some creativity.
The homecoming theme is leave your legacy?
Mm-hmm. Yep, with the emphasis on the CY at the end. So we capitalize that kind of like Cy, the mascot, so.
Yeah. In true Ames style.
Yes.
Yeah. Sounds like it's going to be kind of a dynamic parade with mm-hmm. performers in it and
yes.
some colorful things to look at.
Definitely.
What bands are going to be performing?
Yeah, it'll be parts of the Iowa State Marching Band, and so we're excited to have them, and then they'll be at our pep rally Friday night as well.
Are there going to be bands at different parts of the parade?
Yep, they will probably sector off into different sections of their band, and so I know a group of tubas, they'll be a part of it, and then a different entry is kind of the marching band as a whole. We're supposed to have a couple bands in different spots on Sunday.
There'll be some things yeah. to listen to as well as to look at.
Definitely. Yep.
Okay, it sounds like a righteous parade.
We're excited. We're excited to see it first year. And
am I correct in understanding that your group proposed this parade?
Yes, yes, we began with that back in January, February, mm-hmm. working on those proposals.
Explain, why this? Yes.
We're one of the only universities that doesn't have a homecoming parade, especially in the Big 12 as well. So we kind of wanted that tradition and knew that Iowa State had had one in the past and kind of wanted to reinstate it. And especially with VSHO not having that parade anymore, student orgs that really enjoy doing floats for that parade have responded well to doing this parade. And so
we really wanted to bring that connection with the community this year, and so we thought the parade was the perfect opportunity to do something like that.
So we kind of went through a proposal process with university leadership, and they helped partner with us to figure out kind of the best solution to get a lot of attendees, a lot of people involved in the parade as entries, and ultimately getting it reinstated and seeing what happens for the first year.
Now, when I spoke with somebody from the university here when VSHO was disbanded, instead of the large VSHO event, they were going to try to go for smaller events mm-hmm. throughout the year. Would you say this is part of that effort to kind of disperse celebrations in smaller pieces?
I would say yes in a way, but at the same time, a homecoming parade, we wanted to, you know, make that kind of our own celebration and uh-huh. bring that about with homecoming and kind of separate from VSHO.
This really is your own idea. This was not part of a larger plan. You just
no.
wanted this.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. We saw that there was definitely an opportunity here and mm-hmm. the excitement was buzzing about mm-hmm. doing a homecoming parade, yeah. And we've seen that support and excitement since the works in January or February, getting students kind of intrigued about it. So,
you wanted a parade.
We yes. did. We wanted a parade.
That's what we wanted, and we got it.
Is it a lot of work organizing it?
I would say yes, but our advisor has done a tremendous amount of work, mm-hmm. Courtney Durham, so we'd have mm-hmm. to give her some props definitely. For a lot of the stuff that we've
And
got.
Your advisor is with the Alumni Association at
yes,
Iowa State
yes.
University.
Yes, so we work under her.
So you work in collaboration with her.
Yes.
And the Alumni Association, mm-hmm. who are really the people who are in charge of homecoming week.
Yes, so
correct?
We kind of work closely with them, obviously, because they have a lot of events to bring alumni back. And then we try to plan the student portion and yep. work together. We use a lot of their resources and their connections and sponsorship, and they're a great support, not only Courtney Durham, but the staff at the Alumni Association. It's really a great partnership that we, you know, are lucky to have those resources and that support and able to put on great activities for students and alumni alike.
Explain a little bit who you are. I mean, who your organization is.
Student Alumni Leadership Council, there are a couple different committees that work under that. So homecoming, so that is what we do. We have an ambassadors committee who kind of reach out to students and do a variety of different events and things for the university. We have Cyclone Alley. They work with Cyclone Basketball, and then Class Council, that's what I forgot. Yep, so they do a lot of events for our seniors. They send them off in the spring. So kind of reaching a whole variety of groups for our students at the university.
And you are called the Student Alumni Leadership Council.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
That's sounds like an oxymoron, student and alumni in the same title.
Yes.
Are you part of the Alumni Association?
Yes.
So it's a student membership program. So really the goal of Student Alumni Leadership Council is to get students connected and excited early on to then be members of an alumni association once they graduate. So all members of the council are part of the Student and Alumni Association, which offers students programming. It's a discount program as well to save money around Ames. But hopefully getting involved in the Student Alumni Leadership Council gets people, they're more willing to and likely to stay connected and involved as alumni. So kind of getting that excitement going.
But you don't miss your student years by acting like an alumni while you're a student, right?
No, not at all.
I used to belong, I think it's the same organization, but it used to be called the Student Alumni Association.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Yep.
Yes, I was on that group.
That's awesome. That's exciting. That group. Yeah, that's us.
It's been quite a while. As I remember, I was a student, but I was an older adult student. And mm-hmm. so they wanted that perspective on the council.
I still don't completely understand what the purpose of the group is. It's to I understand yeah. that it's to encourage people to be active as alumni mm-hmm. once they graduate. I mean, somebody is an alum is an alumna automatically when you graduate from mm-hmm. Iowa State.
An active
right?
alumni is kind of our goal, and to do a lot of these student programming, and so getting excited about basketball and homecoming and getting seniors to stay connected, kind of hitting all aspects of a student experience. I mean, even working with the Alumni Association gets, you know, they see how people just love this university and, you know, want to come back and work for it and all the things that they offer. And so getting to have that close connection with Alumni Association staff, I think helps as well. But ultimately our goal is to just have events, promote stuff about Iowa State, and just have fun programming for students so that they want to stay an active alumni because they had a good experience as a student.
I got it.
Yeah.
Now, I read that one of your goals with this parade that you're planning mm-hmm. here on October 23rd, which is Sunday,
yes.
to kick off homecoming, that your goal was to make it an event that brought in people who were not in the Greek system. Mm-hmm. Can you explain a little bit what the thinking and the backstory on that is?
So I guess one of our first plans with reinstating this parade was not requiring the Greek pairings and chapters to participate in this. They have a really big part in homecoming, and, you know, they do a lot of things and compete for points and placements and stuff. And so this is something we didn't want to have them do because we wanted to focus more on other student organizations and, you know, community people coming and participating in it as well.
Normally during homecoming, the Greek system is very heavily involved with the activities?
Yeah. Yep. So they have kind of a competition during homecoming week. They do the lawn displays on Friday night, mm-hmm. Kind of excitement in the streets, and they also are part of Yell Like Hell. So that tradition at
what
Iowa
is
State.
That?
Yell Like Hell. So it's a 5-minute skit that they do with chants and the Iowa State theme song, and they basically do like dances and stuff. So the parade is an opportunity to really extend that outreach and have other organizations feel that they have very great stance at homecoming, and it's their celebration, too. Because homecoming is really university-wide, mm-hmm. and so we wanted to kind of spread that.
And was there a particular reason why you were concerned about that?
There's a lot of talk around Iowa State that Iowa State's homecoming, if they're not Greek, they don't have a lot to do. And so I would say that was one of our main goals this year, mm-hmm. was to try to eliminate that stereotype, because we mm-hmm. do hold many other non-Greek events besides yes. the parade, which we don't have to get into, but
yeah.
We wanted to add something that's very big and important and significant just to kind of hopefully help that feeling.
So the parade is really intended to bring in non-Greek students mm-hmm. and also
community.
The Ames community.
Definitely. Yep.
Uh-huh. So it's inclusive
yes.
kind of
yes.
approach mm-hmm. to the whole thing.
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
Okay. Good luck with your parade.
Thank you so much.
And you're going to be passing here in front of...
We will be.
Is there any information that needs to be given out in terms of parking or streets being closed?
So we will have some parking as well. I know Fairway is closed on Sunday, so that lot is open. But streets will kind of be closed along. So the route, like Abby said, is 5th Street and then also Main Street as well. So pretty much the same road closures as the 4th of July parade. But kind of once you get down here, we will have a bunch of volunteers and traffic directors kind of sending people where they can park and stuff. Mm-hmm. So.
And that's at 2 o'clock on Sunday.
Yes. Correct. Yes.
Okay, well, thank you so much. We're speaking with Allison Pitts and Abby Streuser from the Student Alumni Council at Iowa State University, which is organizing the homecoming parade in Ames and trying to reinstate a tradition, which I think you're hoping
yeah.
to keep going after this.
Definitely.
Yep. Bringing parades back to Iowa State for homecoming, and the parade will occur in downtown Ames on Sunday on the 23rd mm-hmm. at 2 p.m. And is there a website where one can see the route?
Yes, isusalc.org/HC16, and that will have all the parade information on it as well.
Okay. Or if that's too hard to remember, just Google
Iowa State
homecoming parade
yep.
and it will come up. Okay, thank you so much.
Thank you for having us.
Local Talk on KHOI Community Radio, and that was the Iowa State University Marching Band. I am one of your hosts for today, Ursula Rudenberg, here with BJ Kearns. We are talking about homecoming at Iowa State. BJ is an ISU alumni.
Yes, I am. Homecoming is, of course, a week when countless people return to their alma mater, and focus is on the alumni. We were just speaking with Abby
Streitzer
and Allison Pitt. They were from the Student Alumni Leadership Council. It's a group that has been working with the Alumni Association to bring back the homecoming parade to Ames. The tradition has been gone for more than half a century. So in that spirit, we want to share with you the history and meaning of homecoming and the Alumni Association.
Here is Jeff Johnson, President and CEO of the Alumni Association.
Homecoming goes back to 1912. And what was interesting is that this was an idea of the alumni to say, we really need to do our part in coming back and really doing this one thing. Come back and check on our campus. Check on our community. You know, again, mm-hmm. all those fond memories, it didn't really start out as being about activities as much as it was to come back and really check on the campus. They wanted to see what buildings had been built, how the campus had changed, how it had grown, and really if there were any needs of the university. I think the words that kept resonating is that there was a really deep consciousness that really didn't come to be known until they had been away from the university for those number of years. And they realized that they cared for this place. It was really coming home. See how things are. Is the place still what it was? But we know deep in our hearts we have an affection for it. So we just need to come home and see how campus is doing. The Alumni Association itself was founded in 1878. It was founded by the very first graduating class of Iowa State that graduated at Iowa State in 1872. And they really thought after they graduated, it took about 6 years, they really realized that they missed both the campus of Iowa State and the relationships that they had formed. And so those 26 alumni got together and created this organization, which was then Iowa State College, but created the Iowa State University Alumni Association. We've been around since 1878. They were in what we today know as the Enrollment Services Building that used to be named Alumni Hall. Okay. That was the actual homecoming headquarters. The official records, which we still have, that were printed in what was then the Alumnus, which is what the alumni publication was called. It's called mm-hmm. Visions today. They signed in, did their campus tours, and then decided that they would gather for lunch. But in that publication, it lists the 160 individuals who signed in on homecoming day in 1912. And that started this idea of homecoming, which was two words rather than this joint word we see today that we say it all together, homecoming. It was truly homecoming.
That was Jeff Johnson, President and CEO of the Alumni Association. BJ, you are an ISU alumna. May I ask what year you graduated?
I was in the varsity band when I was in college, and that was the years from 61 to 64.
And when did you graduate from Iowa State?
76 and a master's in 81.
What does homecoming mean to you when it comes around? Do you participate in homecoming events?
I am in the alumni band, marching band, and I think that was probably the big thing for me when I was in college, and it was very exciting, the football game. There was always the excitement of the football game. We also had homecoming queens at that time, mums. Have the mums disappeared? I don't know. That used to be the big tradition. You had a big mum to wear for homecoming. And, of course, the big thing was always the game. And my father is, he still is, a graduate of Iowa State. So then my parents would come. And I remember.
So it was a family event.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Met a lot of my parents' friends from when they were in college. That was fun for me.
And the alumni marching band is basically people who were in the band before they graduated from Iowa State.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
I spoke with Dr. Michael Galimo to help describe the ISU alumni marching band. He is chairman of music and theater and director of bands at Iowa State University. As he explains how the alumni band performs at halftime during homecoming, as well as regular ISU marching band. Let's listen.
We always have one piece for the alumni band that they perform on their own at halftime, and then when they're on the field, we bring back the incumbent band, the youngsters, the undergraduates, and combine them. So we'll have probably about 700 people or so on the field for halftime next week.
From experience, I know it's lots of fun. That's an interesting mix when you get them together, especially like ones that just graduated. They would still know most of the varsity band.
Right. The varsity band is a group of students that do this. It's a chorus, and they do it for every game. The alumni band is a group that did it, but they get to come back and relive the experience with homecoming and participate in game day and go out on the field and play their instruments again and relive that experience at halftime.
A lot of joking around.
They have a wonderful time, and that's what it's about. And in addition to the rehearsal and the performance on the day of the game, they also have a brunch, and they have a wonderful meal together over at the Sheeman Center. They have their own officers. They have a reception on Friday night. And they have an organization that does a lot to enhance and support what we do with the current marching band. They provide scholarships and instruments and little spiffs when we travel with the marching band. They provided quite a bit to our program, so we're very indebted to them. We're very proud of the alumni band.
What is it about being involved with the alumni marching band that you enjoy?
The friends that you make in the marching band are friends that you'll have through life. There's something special about being in a collegiate marching band that the people that you meet in that group will support you and help you. It's neat to see the love that they have for the university, for the marching band, and it shows our undergraduates after you graduate, playing your instrument, being in the marching band. It's not something you put away when you graduate. This is something you can keep doing for the rest of your life, and hopefully they're continuing to make music making a part of their life through community bands, municipal bands.
Could we talk about the history of alumni marching bands? When did they start?
They started around 1980. And Ohio State is probably the one that's most prominent, and they do the Script Ohio, and when they bring their alumni back, they've had two or three Script Ohios going on the field all at the same time, and that's been a big deal at Ohio State. But a lot of the schools in the Big Ten, the Big 12, in the Midwest, I think particularly, where there's larger marching bands and more history, that's where you see them. But I think all major universities have some sort of alumni band component. And a lot of marching bands became co-ed because of Title IX in the mid-70s, around 1975. And prior to that, marching bands were primarily a male-dominated group, as it was at Iowa State. But it's kind of interesting. If you go back into the 1940s, women were allowed in the band in the 1940s during the World War II years. And then they kicked them out after, you know, the guys came back from Europe. And it kind of an ironic sort of thing. Alumni bands really kind of started, I think, back in the 70s. A lot of schools partnered with their alumni associations to keep alumni engaged and connected with the university and as donors and supporters and informed and involved with what's going on at the university. Jeff Johnson always uses a line at commencement that what you become as an alum, the university becomes, and what the university becomes, you become. So, you know, this is a partnership with alumni.
So we need to encourage undergraduates to join the marching band so they can come back in as alumni marching band members.
Absolutely, absolutely. It's a very special organization.
It is. The Alumni Marching Band is going to be performing at homecoming. I'm B.J. Hearns, reporting from KHOI Community Radio. I've been talking to Dr. Galimo, director of bands. Thank you for taking the time, and I'll see you at the reunion.
Sounds great. Thank you again so much, and go Cyclones.
And this is Local Talk on KHOI Community Radio in anticipation of Homecoming Week, which begins this Sunday, October 23rd, with a parade in downtown Ames at 2 p.m. I'm Ursula Rudenberg, and I'm here with B.J. Kearns, who is an ISU alumna and member of the Alumni Marching Band, which means, B.J., that you once played in the ISU Marching Band when you were a student. What instrument did you play?
I played the bell lyre or the glockenspiel. And I don't know if Dr. Gleemut mentioned that since it was an all-male marching band, only women played the bells.
Dr. Gleemut did say in his explanation of the history of marching bands that, in fact, there was a time when women were excluded.
It was called the ISU All-Male Marching Band until Title IX was passed. That transformed women's access to participating in sports on many levels. Actually, that's what it was meant for, not the marching band. Title IX was otherwise known as the Higher Education Amendments of 1972, which prohibited discrimination on the basis of sex in educational institutions receiving federal aid. But there is an interesting and little-known twist to the story at Iowa State. Dr. Galimo was actually not entirely correct in saying there were no women in the band back in the day, and even though it was called the ISU Male Marching Band. I'd like to introduce you to my good friend, and of course we're generations apart as far as when we were in the band, but we're good friends now, Lorna Wilhelm Livingston, and she's in the marching band along with me. I recorded her story when she came to Ames last year for homecoming. So this year, she is 90 years old. So here's Lorna. Listen carefully, and you'll hear kind of a surprising story. Welcome back to Iowa State for homecoming.
Thank you. Glad to be here.
The oldest alumni currently attending the reunion and marching.
Correct.
You've been attending the Alumni Marching Band reunions for how many years?
This is our 35th year.
And how many halftime shows have you marched?
All 35.
How did you become eligible for the alumni band?
Having marched with the marching band all 4 years that I was a student at Iowa State.
And what years were those?
1944 through 1948.
Can you tell about your status in the band?
The first 2 years I was in school, the war was on, and so Alvin Edgar had women in the marching band because there weren't enough men. But when the war ended, he invited all of the women to leave the band because he wanted only men. But there were two of us that played bells, and he didn't have any men to play it, so he let the two of us continue in the marching band. Well, the first home game after the war, at rehearsal Saturday morning before the game that afternoon, they announced at rehearsal the 1946 Iowa State 120-piece all-male marching band. And we had to don our policeman's caps. We both had long, dark hair at that time. And we had our hair all pinned up underneath our caps. And I said to Helen, let's skip the bobby pins this afternoon. And so we did. And so as we tip our caps, our long dark hair fell down, and we were right in front of the band facing the bands. Well, of course, that encouraged Edgar to dismiss us. We were to turn in our black uniforms. He advertised. He did everything he could to find a man who could transpose. We had to transpose all of our music from B-flat cornet music, lower it one note and add two flats, and memorize the music because there was no place to carry a lyre. He could not find a man to do that. So he was going to do us a favor and let us continue in the band. But we had to wear white drum major uniforms and march in front so that we were between the twirlers and the band in our white uniforms. So now he considered us not part of the band. It was now an all-male marching band. At our first reunion, and this was 1980, we had our name tags on and the years we were in the band. And the head of the music department came up to me and asked me, what instrument did your husband play? I said, my husband played no instrument. But we didn't have women in the marching band those last 2 years. I said, you had two of us.
I want to thank you so much for taking the time to come here, Lorna. This is BJ Kearns, KHOI Radio. I can certainly relate to everything you said. We're pals on the field. I also play the bells. I was also in the all-male marching band in the 60s.
BJ, you say at the end of the interview that you were in the band and that it was also an all-male marching band when you were in it. What was that experience like for you?
Well, of course, it was interesting being around all those male students, but they pretty much ignored us. When you do your formations for the shows, you have a number and a chart, and they would never put the bell players on the chart. So mm-hmm. we would have to run around and decide where to stand and when to march and just stay out of the way, basically. So it was kind of strange, actually.
There was one form of experiencing prejudice, of kind of not being acknowledged at all, even though you were playing a role in the band.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Well, times have changed.
Yes.
Well, this is Local Talk on KHOI. I'm Ursula Rudenberg, one of your hosts today with PJ Kearns, ISU alumna and member of the ISU Marching Band, and we are talking about homecoming.
Yes, and right after homecoming is Halloween, and Halloween follows for the young and the young at heart. In the second half of the show, we're going to spend a little time on that. Have you been trunk or treating? That's new for me. I didn't know that. But more and more people are doing it, and you are invited to a trunk or treat party on Thursday, October 27th. It will be held at Eastwood Apartments, which are located at the eastern end of 7th Street in downtown Ames. Shara Bradley leads educational, recreational, and resource projects for children who live at Eastwood, and she is the organizer of the Trunk or Treat event. Kay Puttick from KHOI spoke with her and recorded this interview.
I've learned that a lot of people in Ames don't know what a trunk or treat is.
Sure. I didn't. I've never heard of it before.
But it's when people park their cars and they open up their trunks. They've decorated their car trunks, and then kids can trick or treat from trunk to trunk. About 21 trunks so far have signed up for our trunk or treat. It's a spooktacular trunk or treat. It will be on Thursday, October 27th, starting at 5 p.m., and our trunk or treat is a little unique because normally it would be individuals decorating the trunks. However, we have sponsors.
Right.
And who decorate trunks. So the sponsors are different organizations, groups, agencies from the Ames community who have signed up and will provide their own trunk. So, for example, we have three different groups from Ames High coming. Ames High DECA, and then the Key Club, and the Ames High National Honors. Each group will decorate their own trunk. So all the sponsors decorate a trunk, and they provide a wellness alternative to candy, which is another reason why our trunk or treat is unique, is you get a lot of candy around Halloween time.
Mm-hmm.
So we really encourage and challenge our sponsors to hand out a wellness alternative.
Now, I've got a question about that, because there's a general feeling, I don't know if there's a sort of law or regulation about it, that the food should be wrapped. So you mm-hmm. can't just give someone an apple, for example.
Well, fresh fruit, a lot of our sponsors are coming from trusted partners.
Right.
And a lot of
the police.
The Safe Neighborhood team from Ames Police is going to be there. Ames Fire is going to have a reserve engine out. I always invite Ames Police and the fire department mm-hmm. to a lot of our events, and mm-hmm. they can usually come. Mm-hmm. So they will be on site, yes. So that
so
kind of,
they can give apples and, mm-hmm. and things like
yeah.
that. Yeah,
but most sponsors try to get a little creative.
Sure.
For example, I know Ames Park and Rec, who is one of our sponsors, always has a little game and then gives out Nerf balls. So when you approach a trunk, you don't want to just pass it by. There's games. A lot of the trunks are very interactive. So, for example, last year at one of the trunks, they made origami pumpkins.
Oh, so it's not just about grabbing candy or grabbing healthy treats.
Right. It's not just about the wellness mm-hmm. alternative treat, because there's actually a game or an activity to participate
terrific.
In. Another trunk did a fishing game where the kids had to fish over this piece of cardboard to catch their treat.
Uh-huh.
So it's not something that they just really run through. It's an engaging activity at each and every trunk. Trunks are all decorated.
Uh-huh. And I read that they also decorate the bags in which they give things sometimes.
Yeah, I have some color your own trick-or-treat bags. So they're cloth bags that are just black and white, and you can use fabric markers to color them. So in addition to the trunk-or-treat, we have color your own bags, and we will have free hot apple cider and hot chocolate while supplies last. Last year we ran out pretty quickly, so I'm going to try and have some more on hand. Mm-hmm. But kids can color their own trick-or-treat bags and then fill them up with various items from the trunk or treat.
And everyone's welcome. It's not just kids from the apartment.
Yes, it is a free event that is open to the public. So not only will there be kids who live at Eastwood, but kids from the Ames community at large are welcome to come in and enjoy the event.
And what ages do you usually get? This is the fourth time you've had this event.
Yes, this is our fourth year. It's pretty much all ages. Anyone who enjoys trick-or-treating can do it. I know a lot of the parents will kind of hide behind their kids and say they're there for their kids, but they're there getting some things too, because it is very – there is usually at least one sponsor who gives out picture books, children's books.
Oh, lovely. Yes.
So I know that's always a big hit, as we also have a little free library on site at Eastwood that is specifically only for children's books, and it goes through books pretty quickly.
Perhaps we could talk a little bit more about your job, Resident Services Program Manager for CHI Community Housing Initiative, a nonprofit organization that's been a provider of quality, affordable housing for over 20 years. I know that what you do at Eastwood, particularly since it's in Ames, and I believe Eastwood Apartments, they're nestled in a very pretty site, I believe, in the woods.
They are located at the end of East 7th Street. Mm-hmm. East 7th Street is a dead-end street, and it ends at Eastwood. It's very close to Banshell Park. So if you just go down East 7th Street, you'll end up in Eastwood. We are an affordable housing agency.
Resident Services Program Manager, what are your general duties?
Since our residents are typically on a fixed income, they oftentimes have more of a need than most people. So the Resident Services Department was created to help connect our residents with community resources. Mm-hmm. I focus on youth. So I help a lot with youth enrichment and finding tutors for kids that need it, and even helping adults who are looking to get their HISET or high school equivalent. I help them find resources like that.
I know they have a community garden as well.
Yes, we have a community garden at Eastwood, which the kids are very active in, because Eastwood is a subsidized housing. So what that basically means is that your rent cannot be more than 30% of your income. Mm-hmm. And if your income goes up, your rent goes up, eventually stopping at market rate. So a lot of the families living at Eastwood are on a fixed or limited income, so they're not always able to afford fresh produce. Studies have shown that kids who help grow fresh produce are more likely to to eat it. My coworker focuses on our senior properties. Mm-hmm. So she deals a lot with Medicaid, Medicare, and helping seniors who have never had to get assistance before figure out the ropes and go through that process.
In some communities, you've actually saved old buildings that are historic treasures.
Yes.
For example, in Clinton, the Roosevelt School.
Yes. Roosevelt School is our newest historic renovation. We have some other old schools that we have done, but Roosevelt in Clinton actually just had their open house yesterday, so it is brand new.
Right. So it's a very historically sensitive renovation.
Yes. Kept a lot of the original work from the school. The original chalkboards are still there, the wood floors. So it's really exciting, because now people who grew up in the area and went there for school as an elementary kid can now rent an apartment there.
I do recommend people to look at the CHI website to look at some of these beautiful buildings.
CHIHousing.com. And we also have a Facebook, which is facebook.com/CHIHousing. And on our Facebook page, you can look at pictures from the open house at Roosevelt that took place yesterday. And you can also RSVP for our trunk or treat coming up next week.
Thank you very much, Cheryl Bradley. Cheryl Bradley is the Resident Services Program Manager for CHI, Community Housing Initiatives.
Good. Calling all Halloween fans, young and old. Here is your Central Iowa Halloween schedule. Trick-or-treating is happening in downtown Ames on Friday, October 28th. Downtown businesses are inviting you to this family-friendly event. Babies, toddlers, kids, and parents are all encouraged to dress up.
Downtown Trick or Treat in Nevada will be held on Thursday, October 27th, from 5 to 6:30 p.m. Business owners will be downtown to hand out goodies. Citywide Trick or Treat will be held on Monday, October 31st, from 5:30 to 7:30 p.m. According to the City of Nevada, there are around 800 of you candy seekers there.
In Boone and Ogden, trick-or-treat night will be on Monday the 31st in downtown Ogden. You can participate in trunk-or-treat.
And Slater, trick-or-treat is on Monday, October 31st, from 6 to 8 p.m. Get your candy.
Trick-or-treat night in Huxley is scheduled for Monday, October 31st. According to the City of Huxley, all ghosts, goblins, creatures of the night will be free to roam the town in search of goodies from 6 to 7:30 p.m.
Madrid will have beggars' night on Sunday, due to a home football playoff game. There, you are encouraged to bring children to the Madrid home and the Cedars for Beggar's Night.
And this is Local Talk on KHOI Community Radio with your friendly Halloween information. Reed Miller is here with us. He is a storyteller, songwriter, and children's entertainer. And on Sunday, October 30th at 6 p.m., Reed will offer Halloween storytelling campfire at McFarland Park. Welcome, Reed. So what is Halloween storytelling campfire going to be?
It's called Share the Fire. We'll put a fire in the fire ring out at the McFarland Park grounds outside the Nature Center. And tell Halloween stories. Some of them may be slightly scary, but not so scary that people can't go home and get a good night's sleep.
And this is in the evening at 6 p.m.
Yep, we're going to start at 6 o'clock. It's a fairly succinct program, go for about an hour.
And is it dark at 6 o'clock already?
It'll be getting there.
It'll be dusk.
Yeah, uh-huh. It'll be dusk.
So we'll be sitting around the campfire at dusk.
Yep, and it'll be dark when we're done.
And you're going to tell Halloween stories.
Yep.
And who is this for? I mean, who
the whole family
come to
can
this?
Come. Uh-huh. Everybody's invited from the small fry to elders. The thing to keep in mind is to dress for the weather. Maybe bring a blanket to sit on, a blanket to wrap up in for the whole family. That's kind of fun. Get up close to the fire as cozy as possible.
And if it rains?
Then we'll go inside the Nature Center.
Uh-huh.
It's a fine facility. If folks haven't been out to McFarland Park, it's the Story County Conservation Park.
The Story County Conservation is hosting this event.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so that is on Sunday, October 30th, the day right before the official Halloween.
Right.
And that's a Sunday evening at 6 p.m. as dusk falls around the campfire, Halloween storytelling.
Mm-hmm.
Reed, do you have a story just to give us a little bit of a taste of what these stories are going to be like?
Sure. This is the story of Shady Grove. Shady Grove, my little love. Shady Grove, I say. Shady Grove, my little love. I'm yours to stay. Shady Grove was a small town out on the prairie. And when folks had come to Shady Grove, Henry and Henrietta Jones set up the general store. Henrietta would keep the books and keep track of that side of things. Henry would mind the store. And one day Henry was in the store dusting things off. He heard the The board, the loose board up by the front door, kind of squeaked, looked over his shoulder, and there was a woman he'd never seen before, wearing a long gray dress, kind of sidling into the store, looking around. He figured he'd give her a moment or two to kind of look around, check out the merchandise. And then he saw that she went to what you might call the cooler box, an old-time refrigerator, where they'd put a block of ice in a container on the top and let the coolness from the ice chill off what was down below. She'd gone over to that. He walked over to the other side of the cooler box, said, "Can I help you, ma'am?" She didn't say a word. She just pointed a thin, bony finger at a bottle of milk inside. So he opened up the back of the cooler box and handed her a bottle of milk. She snatched it from his hand and scooted out the door just as quick as you could think. Well, that was kind of strange. He hadn't seen anybody ever do that. And after the workday was over, he went next door to Pete the barber and said, "Hey, Pete, did you see a woman in a long gray dress come into my store today?" "Well, I didn't see her come in, but I saw her leave." "Yeah, she crossed the road there and went down the other side of the block, and then she turned a corner at the end. That's the last I saw of her," Pete told him. Well, Henry didn't think much of it. Went inside, told Henrietta what happened. She just chuckled. Said, "Well, maybe she'll be back tomorrow." Sure enough, the next afternoon, same woman came into the store. This time she didn't need to look around. She just hurried over to the cooler box. And when Henry went around to the back side of the cooler box and said, "Something today, ma'am?" she pointed to another bottle of milk. Well, this time he was a little slower, but as soon as he reached his hand across the other side of the cooler box, she snatched that bottle of milk and out of the door she went too. He was a little more quicker on his feet this time, and he watched and saw her go across the street and down the sidewalk and past the end of the block there. Well, Pete had seen her that day, too, and the next day it happened again. Well, Shady Grove was a small town, and by this time, word had spread. And so when she took the third bottle of milk and headed off the step and crossed the road there, folks up and down the street, it become kind of a curiosity. They sort of tucked in behind her, and they followed her down the sidewalk on the far side. Lost sight of her for a second as she turned the corner at the end of the block, because that was the edge of town. Then the crowd kind of burst out past the edge of town, looking around. "Where'd she go? I don't know. Where'd you go? Look over there," somebody said, and they pointed to the graveyard just outside of town. The graveyard they'd set onto the hillside where the big oak tree grew. Yeah, there she is. I see her." And it was maybe as if she had stepped behind the oak tree for a second, because then they didn't see her anymore. "Well, let's find her footprints and see if we can see where she went," somebody called out. So they went around, circled around the tree. No footprints were found. There was just a freshly filled-in grave. And a marker said, "Young woman found dead with her newborn babe and buried." And the date was just 3 days earlier. Well, Henry thought he heard something. He was standing right next to the freshly filled-in grave, sent a couple of boys down to the gravedigger shack, and they brought shovels and picks back, and they emptied out the grave. And there was a box down there in the bottom of the grave. Henry jumped down, pried the box open, and there was the body of that young woman in that long gray dress. And beside her was an infant child, a little girl. And right next to her were three empty milk bottles. Well, Henry took the baby home, and he and Henrietta, who'd never had kids of their own, they raised her, called her Shady Grove, after the name of the town. And when she was courting age, one of the young fellows, and she took a liking to each other. He liked to sing songs, and he sang a little song to her sometimes, went like this. "Shady Grove, my little love, Shady Grove, I say, Shady Grove, my little love, I'm yours to stay." So that's the kind of storytelling we'll do at the campfire. Maybe something a little more spooky as the gloom gathers around. Mm-hmm. Hope folks will come out.
That's actually a very sweet story.
Isn't it? Yeah. Kind of a redemptive ghost story, I think of it as.
It really is. Thank you so much.
Mm-hmm.
Thank you. And that is a taste of the kind of stories one can hear around the campfire.
Yep.
You've been listening to Local Talk, and I've been one of your hosts for today, Ursula Rudenberg, together with B.J. Kearns, and we've been speaking with Reed Miller, who will be telling Halloween stories at McFarland Park on October 30th at 6 p.m. McFarland Park is on 180th Street, east of Ames. And the event is being hosted by Story County Conservation.
That's right.
Today we spoke with Allison Pitts and Abby Stoicer from the Alumni Leadership Council at Iowa State University. And we also heard from Dr. Michael Galimo, Director of Bands and Chairman of Music and Theater at Iowa State, Jeff Johnson from the ISU Alumni Association, and Lorna Wilhelm Livingston, who is an ISU alumna.
You also heard Shara Bradley from Community Housing Initiative. Thanks to Kay Puttick for that interview. Local Talk was engineered by Vincent Valerino. Our theme song, as always, is Backtracking by Tom Richards and Al Harris. That's from their CD, The Ballad of Kate Shelley. Other music you heard was from the Iowa State Marching Band. Remember, Local Talk is archived at khoifm.org. So if there's anything you want to go back to hear again, you can find it at khoifm.org. KHOI is also streaming live online at khoifm.org.
Local Talk airs at 7 a.m., noon, and 7 p.m. You can also listen to it online at khoifm.org and find links to the information we gave on the program today and some of the events. Local Talk is a radio production workshop as well as a show, so if you'd like to try your hand at reporting, we will train you. And so come and join the Local Talk team. Remember, you are what makes KHOI meaningful and possible. Thank you for your participation as listener. Without you, we would just be a few people talking at each other in a very nice studio here at KHOI. Thank you for listening, and we'll see you again on the radio.
Funding for KHOI is made possible in part by the Ames Chamber of Commerce. In the heart of Ames, the Ames Main Street Farmers Market brings local food and fun. Located between the 300 and 400 blocks of Main Street, including Tom Evans Plaza, the Farmers Market provides fresh local fruits, veggies, meats, breads, handcrafted goods, live music, and family entertainment every Saturday.